Welcome back, everyone. I'm Shannon Laird, and you're listening to the 10th broadcast of BME Radio. Today on the phone with us, we've got Alan Faulkner, owner of Obscurities in Dallas and one of the guiding minds in the suspension group Traumatic Stress Discipline. In addition to this interview, you can also view a few clips of their performance, which can be accessed by clicking on their thumbnails in this interview's webpage. Anyway, the first time I saw Alan was when he appeared in one of the first issues of Body Play magazine as, I guess, a disciple of Fakir Muzaffar. Alan, I was hoping you could start by telling us what first drew you to suspension and inspired you to get what's essentially a portrait of Fakir being suspended on your side.
Well, okay, a couple of different things. First of all, the tattoo on my side is not a Fakir. It was actually a design that was drawn by the tattoo artist, a man named John Rhodes, with help from a Native American friend of mine, Jason Hill. It was supposed to depict the actual Native American Okipa. The question of Fakir and my introduction to body suspension. Suspensions, from a purely historical point of view, I had heard of, had seen bits and pieces out of things like National Geographic, but the actual first physical image that I remember is from Modern Primitives, when it was first published in the late 80s. I was absolutely fascinated by the entire book, front to back, and honestly a bit shocked by the images of suspending, but I've always been the kind of person who's worn to try the impossible. And I moved to California in the late 80s and ended up meeting Fakir and spending a good deal of time with him, and he's the one who got me started in the into the whole body piercing industry. Although these days I have taken quite a bit different course because of the fact that body suspensions and the physical changing of the body is more of an ornamentation and an exploration and not as much of a spiritual journey as Fakir and members of the modern primitive culture look at it.
Right. I actually wanted to speak to you about that a little bit more. Now, were you... You were one of Fakir's first apprentices?
Way back in the day, yeah. I was living in Santa Cruz, California, and was friends with Eric Dakota, which is, he's a rather famous person at this point too. And I was just poking holes in people while I was going to college, and started experimenting a little bit with manufacturing body jewelry. Eric was rolling up wire around screws in his room, and the two of us kind of got together and started hanging out and talking about body piercing specifically. And I'd met Fakir a few months earlier and introduced Eric to Fakir, and we all kind of became friends and started discussing things. And this was about the time that Fakir had ended his days at Gauntlet and decided that he wanted to start a body piercing school. And I believe Eric was the first person, and then I was the second person. We were kind of the we were the people that he experimented on in setting up the school. There really was no curriculum at the time. And then after Eric and then myself, then he tried to formally set the school up, and he had four students out of his house, and it progressed from there.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that training was important in forming who you are as a piercer, or was it more just a part of the learning experience that was just a part of the whole?
Well, I've been an extremely lucky person that all throughout my life I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And prior to that, if anyone had asked me if I was going to be a body piercer or if I was going to be suspending or any other things, I would have laughed. I was going to be an engineer, and I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And meeting Fakir really did make a lot of impact in my life, and meeting people like Eric and Vaughn from Body Manipulations and quite a few other people I've met throughout my life have really kind of pushed me in this direction. It wasn't something I was striving towards. It just, every time I turn around, I meet people like Eric Sprague, who are just incredibly fascinating people who are also heavily involved in the body modification industry. And it's just, these things just keep pushing me in this direction. It's not something I actively try. In fact, as you probably already know, I'm kind of shy away from things like interviews and such, because, you know, I'm just a lucky person that happened to be in the right place. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm gonna fast forward a little. Let's talk about the first suspension that you actually did personally.
Oh, it was a nightmare. The first suspension I ever did was in '92. I had done quite a few other body rights. I had specifically the one that formed into the suspension was, I'd done quite a few different ball dances of, you know, sewing the bells and the balls and the skin and dancing around. I tried to get information on suspensions. I was back living in Texas at the time and knew no one other than Fakir who had ever done a suspension. And I contacted him and spoke to him about it, and his information was very bizarre. At the time, he was explaining that he was running 16-gauge rods through the skin, then pulling them up and using vice grips and twisting them, and that's how they were hanging, which didn't really make any sense to me. Being a logic-minded person, and specifically thinking from an engineering standpoint, I was like, okay, let me rationally think this out. I was like, all right, I've done ball dancing. I've hung as much as 5-pound weights off of my skin. So if I have put fishing line through my skin and hung 5-pound weights, then being at the time, I think I weighed about 135 pounds at the time, I was like, okay, if I distribute out the weight, and I did end up doing 30 piercings and running fishing line through them, I was like, distributing 30 piercings for my body weight, I'd be working at less than 5 pounds, which made sense. Now, if I could have worked in a true dynamic system like we do now, it would have worked, but we were using a static system of running one point up to one hook. I didn't really know anybody who was piercing at the time, or at least nobody that I got along with. I trained my girlfriend at the time to run needles through me, and we ended up putting 20-pound test fishing line through my skin, and I hung by that, and it was a nightmare. It took hours to finally get up, and when I did finally get up, I only hung for about 3 to 5 seconds because the fishing line started to physically cut through my skin. And it was one of those things where I decided that evening I was going to do it, and no one was going to stop me, and I did not think it through correctly. And it's also, that experience has caused me to do a lot of research and design into suspensions, because I did such a poor job on it.
Mm-hmm. After that first failed experience, did you go back almost immediately, or did you swear it off for a while?
I swore it off for a while, just because I knew that I didn't understand the mechanics properly, and I started researching it. And I started playing around with doing more pulling and less hanging, putting different items through my skin, you know, metal rather than fishing line, things like that, and pulling on them and testing it. The next suspension came about, I think, about a year later, and that one was actually done with hooks. And surprisingly, at that time, people had started moving from using straight steel and bending it into hooks, but they were being sharpened to points, and the hooks were being pushed through without needles. And my suspension at that time was an experiment of using needles first and then running the hooks in behind, which worked incredibly well. And to this day, I mean, we still use piercing needles first and then the hooks behind. And that experience was much better. It was, I think, 10 or 12 hooks. The hooks were 10-gauge hooks, and I hung upright. I had hooks across my chest and across my back, and hung for about 35, 45 minutes, and the experience was just absolutely incredible.
In what way?
It was such a dramatic difference to the other experience. I hung mostly in the dark. It was in my shop at the time, and it was just, you know, it wasn't the extreme pain as before. It was more of a floating, drifting sensation, and it was, I could really get inside of my body, because, I mean, it's, my body to me is just a vessel I live inside of, and it's kind of, I love my body and hate my body at the same time, because it limits me, but on the other hand, it's my connection to the outside world. Mm-hmm. And I've always, you know, been a big advocate of body modification in the fact that when you adorn or when you change your physical form of your body, you're actually coming closer to your inside being coming in contact with the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
Without getting too philosophical,
right?
So
suspension, as much as you're, you know, you're maybe hyper aware of your body, you're also sort of disconnecting from your body in a sort of an altered states isolation tank sort of way.
At that one, yes. Every suspension I do is different,
mm-hmm.
and that's always the hard one because everybody wants a in-stone answer of this is what it feels like to suspend, and honestly, every time I suspend, it's a completely different story. That's why we've broken it down to public and private. Public and private really has nothing to do with the amount of people that are around. It's just that public ones that we do are more for shows,
mm-hmm.
and it's much less of an introverted thing, where private suspensions, no matter how many people are around, it doesn't matter who's around because what's going on is inside your head and inside your body, and that's where people have things like religious experiences or out-of-body experiences or just pure, you know, introspection.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to play a little bit of music, and when we come back, I want to talk to you a bit more about the different types of experiences that people have and also the difference between suspension as performance art versus ritual.
Okay.
This is some Spaceman 3. This is 235 from 1984. We're back with Alan. Before the break, we were talking about the different experiences that people have, and you mentioned religious experiences and out of body. You've probably done more suspensions than anyone out there. What are some of the different experiences you've had personally?
Well, sadly, a lot of the experiences that I've had have been just from the public experiences because we do a whole lot of shows, and the shows are great and they're fun and I love being a rock star and on stage and everything, but that's really not the aspect that I enjoy. I really enjoy the private suspensions. And I've had, unfortunately, I haven't had these grandiose, wonderful experiences that a lot of other people have. I kind of fell into the whole modern primitive movement when I moved to California in the 80s, and I was kind of lost searching for something, and unfortunately, the modern primitive movement is not what I thought it was, and it kind of upset me in, on one hand, but on the other hand, it really kind of opened my eyes to the fact that the body is nothing but a large machine. You have electrochemical responses that can be interpreted many, many ways, and you can break that down as simple as pain, that when someone feels pain, they're getting the same electrical sensory sort of response as pleasure. It just kind of depends on how your brain interprets it. And the ecstatic state that your body enters from doing like all different forms of body modification, suspension specifically, we're talking about here, can be interpreted so many ways. And some people interpret it as a religious, spiritual experience. I'm more of kind of a, I approach it from a more scientific point of view. The state of shock that you enter that comes along with the ecstatic state, the hallucinations, the introspection, all of these things can be easily explained from a medical point of view, but still the experience is different each time. I've gotten to the point of hallucinations. I've seen this white light that Fakir talks about. I've been alone, floating in a void. I've gone through a lot of different emotions and experiences, and they're all almost impossible to describe with words, and it's one of the reasons I do share the whole suspension thing with people, is that I want them to be able to understand on their own. And you don't have to hang from hooks to have the experience. There's a million different things you can do. It's just that a body suspension is a quick journey right to the bottom. In a matter of seconds or minutes, depending on the person, you're immediately into this ecstatic state, and you're immediately have crossed over this gap. And it's hard for me to explain. It's hard for me to tell people, because everyone's going to have a different experience, and no one's going to ever understand mine. When I help other people with suspensions, I try not to give them too many ideas of what they should expect, because they're going to get what they need out of it. They're never going to get what they want or what they expect. But if they walk into it, you know, with an open mind, they'll have an incredible experience.
Mm-hmm. Are there similarities between a suspension experience and a psychedelic or tryptamine type experience?
Actually, yeah, in a lot of ways. I was a real heavy drug addict in the mid '80s. Mainly, my thing was hallucinogens and crystal meth, and I ended up spending some time in jail over it. And when I got out of jail, my addictive personality and a matter of a court order also pushed me into a rehab program. And then being clean and sober is another thing that's kind of made me a very extreme person. I've gone from one extreme to another, and the high is not the same, but the high is better. It's cleaner. The endorphin and adrenaline rush that your body produces from large amounts of pain is an extreme and very, very, very fast high that does actually have a letdown, but it's not anything like a drug letdown. It's more of an emotional thing, because once you grasp something that is just incredibly beautiful and then you let it go, you're going to have a certain amount of depression no matter what.
You say that it's incredibly beautiful and obviously incredibly moving. Mm-hmm. What does it do to that experience when you take it and make it sort of a public rock and roll performance art?
It dilutes it really, really, really heavily. People watch us do these shows, and they think that, unfortunately, they think that that's what it's all about, and really the Hanging from Hooks is not about that. The suspensions are just a medium I use to do performance art. And that's why, like I said, I keep trying to really heavily designate public and private, because they're completely different things. A lot of people really, really like what we do. A lot of people really hate what we do. For instance, Fakir, I'll bring his name again, he despises the fact that we do body suspensions as a performance art. He thinks that we are destroying we're being disrespectful to our heritage and our culture, and I don't see that at all. I see every daily act as being a ritual, whether it be walking across the room, getting up in the morning, taking a shower. These are all very ritualistic activities, and using them as a means of performance is not diluting it. It is not disrespectful. But, you know, I can't convince other people otherwise. Mm-hmm. It's their opinion.
I'm going to mention a couple other artists that have used performance in their work, the first one being the Australian artist Stalark. Do you see any relations between what you're doing with the sort of more academic statements that he was trying to make?
Well, Stalark would probably not agree with me, but from what I understand, Stalark is not a very agreeable person in general. He's got his own specific ideas. But I honestly see a lot of parallels between my visions of body suspensions and Stalark's. I'm using it as an art form. Now, he is a bit different, as we talked about prior to this, was that he's more of a cyberpunk, and I would like to be more like that, but I'm truly not. I'm more of just a visual artist. I was actually a performance artist before I ever got into suspensions. I used to do like SM performance art and things like that, and I've always just been incredibly enthralled with performance art. And I think it's a medium that society really doesn't view as a true art form. The body suspensions just kind of came along after my performances had already begun, and the people like Stalark have very much influenced me, and I almost think it's kind of sad that people were so frightened by Stalark in the 70s and the 80s because his stuff was so severe, and a lot of people didn't understand what he was doing. I can only give my interpretation, not his, but I see what he's doing as being an experiment with the body to a certain extent. He talks about, like in his book, The Obsolete Body, how he and his body are like two different things. He talks about his body almost in a third-person point of view, and what exactly he was trying to portray with in each individual art or each piece of art that he's done, I can't say because I'm not him, and he doesn't really go into his explanations real heavily. But the fact that he is portraying it as art, I think that I find a parallel with that, at least. Although our stuff is much more kinetic, it does definitely have that rock star type flair to it, but I think that's more of a sign of the generation and less a sign of the art being different.
Right, and you actually did an emulation of one of his performances a while ago.
Right, his I believe he calls it in his book the sitting suspension. We named it the lotus suspension. It looked very much like a lotus sitting position. The reasoning behind it, at least my reasoning behind doing it, was because I think that that specific piece is one of the most beautiful pieces he's ever done, and his book, The Obsolete Body, is very difficult to find. A lot of people haven't seen it, and I wanted to do a recreation of it just to let the crowd see it, to experience it. And I have a lot of respect for the man. He's definitely an engineer on many levels, because the dynamics of doing that suspension was incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm. Now, another group that did related work was Genesis Peorage's Coombe Transmissions, which later became Throbbing Gristle.
Right.
I don't think they actually did suspensions, but they did a lot of heavy body oriented ritual with you know, and they took a lot of, you know, serious ritual and magic ideas and converted them into public performances.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I see as a parallel between your groups is this evolution where the performances get more and more heavy and more serious as time goes by.
Well, TSD is like this giant juggernaut. It's very difficult to stop, and it is a collective of quite a few different people. Although I'm primarily the main person who runs it, I'm hardly the one who does all the work. There's so many people involved in it, and the people come and go, and I try to kind of hold the reins and keep it pointed a certain direction, but we sit around, we brainstorm, and things move forward. We are actually kind of backpedaling at this point, but after doing the 9-man human mobile, there's like no way to top that kind of engineering structure, at least not at this point for us. But we also identified a lot of problems that we needed to deal with. that we've gone down back to the drawing board, redesigned hooks, redesigned rigs, and been going through and redesigning the rigging, because the part where you hang from hooks, that's the easy part, and people don't realize that. Our performances, the engineering behind it is a nightmare. We actually have a medical crew, we have a piercing crew, we have an engineering crew, we have a rigging crew, and we all have to work together because, like I said, the nine-man mobile, that thing weighed over 3,000 pounds, and if anything had failed, it could have cost the lives of quite a few different people. And I love pushing the envelopes, but I really don't want to take people's lives into my hands. And that one scared me, to be quite honest. And it didn't scare me to hang, and it didn't scare me to hang at any height. It scared me because I wasn't 100% positive on the design behind it. And I built quite a bit of the thing. And the chances of it failing were fairly low, but the chances of it failing were not zero in my eyes. And we were being pushed by a large corporation to do it no matter what. And there were a lot of negative things that were behind the scenes that people didn't see. And it disbanded the group to a certain extent because of the fact that we fought a lot amongst each other because there were a lot of things we weren't happy about. And that kind of saddens me. But we've regrouped again since that point, and we've really gone back to the drawing board, and we're moving forward again and doing a lot more small stuff. And where it's going to go in the future, I don't know. I lost my passion for it after the whole Ripley's thing, but I have it back tenfold again, and I want to continue pushing forward. And I used to have a bit of an elitist attitude about it. I wanted to be the only one. I wanted to be the center of attention, and you know, I'm a human being. I have my flaws, but these days I'm much more of the opinion of sharing and working together, and there are a lot of people out there doing suspensions now, and there's as many good ideas as there are bad ideas, and you know, the more that we open up the lines of communication and share information, the better.
Yeah, that sort of will bring us to the mainstreaming of suspension and extreme body play in general that I want to get to next. I'm going to throw in another song here. This is Space Express. It's from Electronic Toys 2, which is a retrospective of early synthesizer music. Thank you. back before the break, Alan was telling us about being on the Ripley show, which is about as mainstream as you get, at least as far as what anything the suspension is going to be on. And I think it's been publicly accepted. Nobody got real upset about it. Right now there's suspension groups popping up all over the place. There's Wax, there's ICU, there's Wicked, there's Human Sculpture, there's Wildcat. I mean, there's tons of them. Alan, what do you think about, this, what was, an unbelievably marginal activity, 10, 15 years ago, practically unheard of, being known by everybody nowadays and being taken part in by all sorts of people?
Well, I think it's really incredible. I think it's a good, positive thing. It's finally coming out from the underground. The only thing that really worries me at this point is that there are a lot of people who are jumping headlong into it who don't understand the dynamics of it. As I've said before, the actual act of hanging by hooks is not all that strange. There are, of course, a lot of things like shock. We have managed to push some of our people into really deep shock from doing things like the rotisserie, where we had people spinning in multiple directions, in a three-dimensional direction from hooks. And one of our members, we actually had to administer 5 liters of fluid to him afterwards because he'd gone into such deep shock. I've seen people pass out and vomit into the back of their throat and stop breathing, and there's a lot of dangers. In general, though, basic suspensions really aren't that dangerous. What worries me a lot, though, is the rigging. We do, as I said, a lot of heavy kinetics, really high stuff, and we actually have a professional rigging crew who work with us, and I see a lot of pictures on the internet, and some of it I'm just like, oh wow, I never really thought of doing it that way. Then there's other times I look on the internet, and I'm just like, oh my god, these guys have no clue what they're doing. They're really going to hurt people, and I'm in a very uncomfortable situation of, do I contact these people and say, hey, this is not safe, it's not really my place, but on the other hand, I feel responsible because, we have really pushed it as a mainstream thing, and when people do get hurt, I feel, at least to a certain extent, responsible, and that's kind of a bad thing. I can't really be responsible for other people's actions. I just hope that as people experiment more and more with it, that they are careful and they do research, and, there's a, like, I'm really glad for things like BME. BME is a great information source for people to be able to contact each other. And, I don't know what I can say too much about it. I'm happy and I'm sad all at once.
Well, one of the other roles other than performance that TSD seems to have is facilitating suspension rituals for people that don't necessarily have the experience on their own.
Right.
Do people contact you and say, I really want to do a suspension? And
We do get a lot of that, and the amount of email that we have is just kind of overwhelming. We're getting ready to change servers, and we need to set up some autoresponders and an FAQ and a lot of other things because we get a lot of the questions over and over. The most difficult one always is, I want to suspend. How can I do it, and where can I do it? I don't have a whole lot of firsthand experience with other individuals doing suspensions other than the body manipulations crew in San Francisco. I haven't really worked one-on-one with a lot of people, so it's hard for me to say, oh, you should contact Joe Blow here because I know they do suspensions, just because I worry about it. Most of the time we try to keep kind of a very official, kind of forefront of, this is what we do, this is how we do it. If you're interested in suspensions, we do suspend people. Now, we're running into a whole gray area here of offering it as a service. Is, how legal is this? Is it technically illegal? Is it not? I'm running into the risks of hurting people. I've been working with a lawyer of drawing up a really, really mean release form because I don't really want to be responsible for these people coming out here. But we have brought in outsiders and suspended them. Mostly we scare them off with a fee. We ask for money, and that really most of the time people get mad and they think it, that I have hours and hours of time and I have all these free supplies that I can use, which is not true. We're doing suspensions at least on a weekly basis, and mostly for ourselves, not for others. And, when people do come in from the outside, they understand that we have to take time out of our schedule. We do have to use supplies. And it's not a profit thing. When we start spouting numbers to people, they think that we're sticking it in our pockets, and We're really not. Mostly we're just trying to pay our warehouse rent. We're trying to buy needles and gauze and so on and so forth. And, you know, I'm a capitalist. I own a business. I would love to get rich, but with TSD, I'm not trying to get rich. I'm really not. And sometimes it's hard for people to understand that. I'm sure that you can agree with me to a certain extent on that with BME. I mean, people probably look and say, oh, you're just trying to get rich, and that's really a no, not your motivation behind it.
No, but it'd be nice.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you do have a lot of information, though, technical information on your webpage. Is that who is that intended for?
You know, our webpage right now, we're getting ready to, like I said, change servers. We're completely revamping it, and we're trying to decide what is good information and what is bad information. That I originally, it was set up as a hobby of mine for sharing information with other people I knew that did suspensions around the world, and I just kind of just, as things came to mind, I threw it on the webpage. And if you look at the webpage, you realize that it's really poorly put together because of that. I now have a team I'm working with.